kind of to, for those that missed last week and are here, just kind of give you a little background on why I'm doing this, why I chose this topic, let me put it that way. There are a lot of things in our daily lives, basically, that we as women and as men, that some of these topics kind of specifically to us, I guess, that they may start out as trivial or not super explosive to us, but we can focus on them more and tend to put them, the struggles and the trials and the tribulations that we go through before God. And that tends to kind of create them as an idol in our heart. Not as a physical statue that we're worshiping or anything like that, but just different aspects. Our wants, our desires, our things like that. There are things that I struggled with. I still continue to struggle with them sometimes, a lot of times. And I have to constantly make sure that my mind and my focus is in the right spot so that I don't make them bigger than what they are, and that I, as Ms. Pat said in her prayer, put God first in these things. The lesson for today that we're working on is godly families. And I want to put a disclaimer on this. That having a godly family is not bad. that was not my intention in doing this lesson, in doing this. We are instructed to teach our families and to teach our children and to be helpful in teaching everyone else to be more godly and to put God first. So that was not my intention. My intention was not to make having a godly family a bad thing when writing this. So, disclaimer said, it is a blessing to have a godly family. And unfortunately, not everyone we know has this. They are, you know, not everyone is enjoying this blessing. We have members here who spouses are not faithful, or they have fallen away, or were never faithful to begin with. So they're not sharing in this blessing with us. But they are there. They still attend, and they're still trying their best to be godly, and that's something that we all can learn from. But is it possible to turn that want, desire, wish to have a godly family into an idol for us? Any comments?
I think you can.
I think you can. You might have a family that, you know, they attend services every time the doors are open. They live a good and moral life. You know, they don't rob, they don't steal, they don't cuss, they don't drink. But you may have a desire for your family to be more godly. Now, that in itself is not wrong.
What do you mean by godly, more godly? What do you mean by, you may desire them to be more godly?
Well, that's one of the things that we're going to be talking about is, okay, they come to services, and they, again, they don't drink, they don't smoke, they're not immoral people, but you may have a desire for them to do more, to be more, to, yes, ma'am.
To study more and to be more active in the Lord's work.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with that.
No.
As long as it does not become an obsession.
Exactly.
And sometimes what we do is we want them to appear godly. I take this more when we make something an idol of the heart. We want men to think that they're godly. We may know that there are things in our children's lives that are not right, and yet they come, they lead in prayer, they wait on the Lord's table, they teach classes, and we don't want it dealt with because the appearance. If we go, say, as a mother, if I know my child has a problem drinking, but I don't want anybody to know about that because all appearances are, they're perfect. Mm-hmm. And so that's my idol, is I want people to think they're perfect mm-hmm. when they're not. And I'm willing to sacrifice their soul mm-hmm. because I don't want people to talk to them because I don't want them to know because that makes me look bad.
Right.
And so I don't think we can desire our children to be too godly. We need them to be godly for the right reason.
Right. And that was part of that disclaimer. It's not wrong to want our families, our children's, and our husband to be too godly. It's not wrong for that.
There's no such thing as too godly.
Right. I mean,
that's where you're getting trouble.
Right. Okay. Right. So, pardon my wordage.
I understand what you're saying. I just think when you say too godly, that leaves a wrong impression because there's no such thing as being too godly.
Right.
The more we have the right attitude toward God, which is what godliness is, the more we're going to act like God and
mm-hmm.
do the things God
wants
us to
do. Right. And back to, you know, when we were given the definitions, you know, last week, it's our attitude and where we place the emphasis on everything that we do.
I realize now where this was going, that having read that far, my first thought was to idolize the godly family. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
To idolize a godly husband or something. Put them in front of God.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So exactly.
It changes the God from godliness in your family, though, to actually power or pride or, you know, position. Something like the Pharisees. They were really interested in righteousness for righteousness' sake. They were interested in being self-righteous and appearing righteous because they wanted the power and the position that it gave them. And so when we talk about having godly families, if we switch it, because you know the attitude that you dealt with down here, I think you will probably deal with it more as you go along. Is not because we want them to be godly, but because of the appearance of it. So we change the God from being godly for them, them going to heaven, to us appearing better because we're the parent or we're the even as a teacher we can do that. You know, it's to make us look good. You know, so the God has changed.
Right.
It's not really godly family's not the God anymore. It's the pride and what it makes us look like.
Right.
It's the God.
Anybody else comment?
Are you talking? I mean, could it be that to the point of some people put a superior or an authority figure on an elder or elder's wife, a deacon, a deacon's wife, and if you're striving to have, I want to be an elder's wife, or that you're trying to get that your husband to be in that position, can be obsessing.
Exactly. Exactly.
But you desire that. We talked about desire, and Paul said desire those things, and Christ wants us to desire those things. So.
It's not wrong. It's not wrong. And I keep repeating, it's not wrong to desire that.
To work to that.
Correct. It's not wrong for that.
But shouldn't you desire the service, not the position?
Exactly. The end result. Yeah. Or you, yes, no. Fix
not
the wording.
Because I don't want to, you know, wear the elder's wife hat, but because I want to serve in that role.
Right. And you're doing this back to loving God and loving our neighbor, not loving ourselves, not loving the... I wish y'all could just open my head and see what I've got in here.
Something on the pedestal where, you know, so people can see you. I think that's what you're talking about. What you're trying to say to you is if you desire the office, which you should, or the matter of service, but you desire the position sake, so people will think how we understand.
Right. It's like
on a different level than everybody else.
The Pharisees were doing all of this out in public, out in the streets, out in public, and they weren't doing it, you know, behind closed doors.
Well, at one point, Jesus told them, you do what they say, don't do what they do.
Exactly.
And so, what it gets back to is purpose. What is our purpose?
Exactly.
In being God, in appearing God. Are we truly godly? Are
we just appearing? Exactly.
We want our children to look godly. As long as nobody knows what they're doing and they look godly, then mm-hmm. I will do.
Then that goes down to, you know, my, you know, is our desire for that godly family a desire in our love for God and for our neighbor and a desire for heaven? Or are we desiring this godly family for the world to see how godly we are?
Or even the church, even our brethren.
Exactly. Exactly. Even it, you know, let's say some of them have fallen away. I've got some siblings who are not serving like they used to. I can become so focused, I think, in getting them and what they're doing wrong and trying to fix them that I've lost my focus in my own personal service and serving God. So we have to be careful of that as well.
I don't see how you can lose your focus, you know. I mean, it is right to, you know, try to get them back in line, but when you say you can lose your focus, how can you do that?
All right. I wish I had a camera. That was great. Amy.
Well, I think for starters, it all boils down to what you're saying is a person's attitude, what their heart is, what their motive for doing these actions are. And if you have family members or even, like you said, some members of our congregation, their spouses even are not following the Lord or they've fallen away, all you can do is be there to instruct them the proper way and show them this is what God wants. You have to realize that you do not have control over everybody, and I think especially as women, and I would assume probably more so even mothers, because, you know, your job is to teach others and bring up your children, but it's up to them as an individual what's inside their heart, what their motives are for what they're doing. You know, they could be just going to services, but it's not really in their heart. And so I think you have to learn that you don't get it to where you become obsessive over trying to control someone and, you know, like, have an attitude like, well, you're going to, you know, if I keep wearing you down, eventually you're going to, you know, go back to church. And it's up to God and themselves, each individual. I mean, that's the whole point of the free will. And you have to just step back and you just do what you can do and focus on ultimately yourself and what God wants you to do. It's just like the parable of the sower of the seeds. Not every, you can, you know, go around and spread the gospel to everybody, but that doesn't mean that everybody's going to react the same way.
Deanna, I'm going back, working my way front.
Well, I think a couple of ways that could be a problem. One, you could, in the back of your mind, have the thought, oh, when they come back to church, everybody's going to say, you wouldn't return to the Lord if it hadn't been for God. Or if you're spending absolutely all of your time over there working with them, and not that you should. study with your husband or study with your child or other aspects of your service authority neglected and focus everything on that one person.
I think Lauren was next.
That's what I was going to say.
That was my
thought. You get so tied to caught up in focus on that one person or practice to do or whatever that you're not doing anything else. I think that's where you get in trouble.
I think sometimes we box God in a corner and we get so focused on doing what God said. And if I do everything that my child's falling away, and if I do everything that God requires of me, that child is going to come back. And so I'm focused on that, but then that child has a will of its own and it does not come back. Then what that does, and I've seen this happen to people, it shakes their confidence in God. Mm-hmm. So they have lost their focus as who is in control. And what I am to do, yes, I'm to do everything in my power. I have a son who fell away. We did everything we could. He had to make up his own mind. He had to come to a realization of his need for God. I have a grandson who is now fallen away. When they won't talk to you, when they won't allow you to be an influence in their life, you have to focus somewhere else. You can't become so obsessed with, well, God, why? Why did somebody else's child come back in that month? And so we blame God. And so therefore, we do lose our focus is even as God and who He is and what He's done, because we blame Him when the person doesn't do what we think they should, because we did what God says. And Amy's right, there's different kinds of soil. Mm-hmm. And you know what? Our children are different. Soil. Just because we raise them does not mean they're going to have the good and honest heart.
Exactly. And that was kind of my point, both of those together, was we can become so entrenched in trying to get them, we're teaching, we're showing, we're doing, focusing strictly on them, that we stop studying with our husband, studying with our other children, or children, or our own personal study. We've given up our personal quiet study time and have become so focused on this one situation that we've created that situation as an idol.
You're going to ask a dollar.
I think, too, that discernment takes over when you have, when you mother of small children, their focus is on teaching and training. Different than a grown child who may be out on their own. So situations change, and even direction on the Lord changes. So these young mothers with these young children, it's very clear. God says train them, teach them. You know, as you're going down the road, as you're sitting at home, in Deuteronomy 4 and Deuteronomy 6, it's clear. I mean, it's constant. You know, it's not just a 30-minute sit-down reading the Bible story. It's constant teaching, training for these hearts to be attuned in to respecting God and His Word. To for them to hopefully one day make that on their own decision. And you do make decisions for them to get them. You do manipulate, you know, and you're going to talk about these things. You do make things conducive, and you make choices, and you do this when they're young,
right,
when they're growing, and when you do that you may not be able to do
when they're older. Right. It's not right to do when they're older.
And so there is discernment there as to the age and the stage of which you're hoping to train your children.
Ms. Gatt.
We have to stop and think sometimes, too. I've got children that are out of duty. But you can do just so much, and when you're focusing so much on that, you're casting your pearl before swine. And we're told not to do that.
Lisa.
Now on the other side of it, it was very encouraging when David preached that night, and he said to keep calling, keep in touch with people that are falling away because it works on you. Mm-hmm. They may not be the obsession.
Right.
But the consistency.
And there is that line. There is that line. Because I know that having been in that situation, she did not obsess over him, but she didn't let up either. She still...
As a parent,
don't care how old your children are, you have the obligation, I believe, to talk to them every opportunity you have if they're not serving God.
Right.
And every opportunity they will allow you. Sometimes they won't allow you, like their grandson. You know, I call. He never answers my call, and he never returns them. I send an email to his wife, and I get no response back. So, you know, unless I physically drive over there, and I never know when they're home. They both work, they have two jobs, so I never know when they're home. But another thing that we need to be very careful of is, and what you're talking about, if we become so obsessed with the one who's fallen away, we forget the ones who are faithful.
Exactly.
And the ones who are faithful suffer because they feel, you know, who am I? You know, what have I done to you?
Exactly.
I've done it. But they always, and I know this from personal experience, not with my child, but I grew up in a family, as you did too, where we had unfaithful siblings. And it seemed to be that whatever was going on with them was taken care of, to the hurt sometimes of things that they could have done with the faithful children. And you feel taken for granted. And I love my parents, and I know my parents love me. Same thing as these parents. But they were, I don't know that they were obsessed, but it's, and I can feel, I know how they feel, because in your heart you think, okay, if I do this, maybe it'll make a difference in their life. But you really need to try to balance some of this so it doesn't become an obsession or an idol. But, you know, I've got to do something to bring them back. And sometimes the only thing you can do is pray and turn it over to God, because there's no more you can do.
Right.
Except talk to them when you can.
And lead by example.
That's exactly right.
Well, and that's great segue. That's my next point.
One more point on that, please. The danger that we also see, and my parents fell into it because I had an unfaithful sister, is that you do not follow God's word. You're so intent on trying to have a connection, to remain, you know, with them and everything. That they did not withdraw from us.
Right, you don't that issue
and
the discipline.
So you do. You turn away from God's word and what He says and how you do. And it doesn't have to be a godly family. Families can become gods, especially when you put them to your duty, you know, before.
Right.
Whether it's trying to get them to be more godly or what, they become the focus in your life instead of serving them.
Right.
In so many different ways. So it's not just godly families, it's families in general.
Right.
Can become number one in the heart.
Right.
One thing I would like to add, what Linda says, just because parents do not withdraw from their children does not mean that they don't love God and they're not trying to seek God's will. Steve's dad believed that it was not right to withdraw from them. Yeah, he had to come up with a verse. But it was not and I know this was the same thing with Linda's parents, it's not, I don't care what God says, this is what I'm going to do.
Right.
And so sometimes we differ on these things, and, you know, but we do need to not indict them with loving that person more than they love God, because they know what God says, and they're not willing to do it.
Right.
That's all.
Proverbs.
We probably just skip a section up here about what we can do.
Well, I think we've kind of, but if, let's go back then. We kind of talked about it through all of this. What are some of the ways that you listed that you and your families, that you yourself or your family could do to help you remain close to God?
Studying together. Praying together, attending regularly Bible study classes, reading and teaching your children daily. And one more thing I added to this was marriage. The Bible tells us not to be unequally yoked. Sometimes, you know, we tend not to wait on the Lord, and we marry, and this, you know, person you marry, he or she may not be a Christian. But, you know, over there in 2 Corinthians 6:14, it tells us not to be unequally yoked. And then Paul, over in 1 Corinthians 7:12-16, says that if we do marry someone and they are pleased to stay with you, well, you keep him or her. But if they wish to leave, they could. And it's not saying that, because one day, you know, they may see the light. They may come and they may, you know, hear the truth and realize this is, you know, God's church. But if we are unequally yoked, it tends to pull this half over here and this half over there. But if, you know, if we be equally yoked in the Lord, it helps. It helps, you know, being equally yoked. And, you know, like, well, take me for instance, my husband, you know, he didn't grow up in the church like I did. He you know, grew up in the Baptist church, but he came and he heard the gospel, he obeyed the gospel. He went to church maybe about a year or two, and, you know, and then he found every excuse not to continue to go or whatever, you know. So, but that didn't discourage me because I knew the truth. So, and it didn't make me lose my focus either, because I know I couldn't save him. You had to, and I had to save myself, and I had to do what the Lord told me to do. But, you know, make a good godly family, you know, being equally yoked.
Okay. Anybody else?
To practice hospitality.
Gotcha.
Anyone
else? Amy?
I think we also need to strive to be the role to help meet the God tenderness to be towards our husband and try not to step out of them. And I think that will also help encourage your husband to take on the role that God, you know, created him as the provider, the head of the household. And it'll bring more harmony in your household.
Okay. Anyone else?
I think as we see our children grow, and even us, we become young Christians, and we have heart and a turn towards God, and we study God's Word, and, you know, we're doing what we understand. But as we study more, hopefully, we will make better discernments, and hopefully we can train our children to be better discernments, like things on the dress, or all things that we participate in. We're not going to be, you know, we're just going to become more mature, you know, and I think we become more and more like Christ in thought, you know, in attitude. And so, you know, it's just whatever you're studying, whatever, you know, wherever you are in that process.
And that goes back to studying
right,
with your family in the home, right?
You know, we want to be more and more.
Right. In Proverbs 1:8. We're told, it says to hear, my son, your father's instructions, and do not forsake your mother's teaching. So we are told to teach our children. But the vocal teaching is important, as well as the seeing and seeing us lead by example. Someone had mentioned leading by example. That was one of the forms that of teaching that Jesus did with his, you know, disciples. He led by example, and he expects us to do the same thing. So as far as the constant vocal teaching, they also need to see us doing our personal study and not putting other things first in that aspect. I have on here to give an example of someone that didn't lose his focus or his family's focus in their service to God while trying to teach an evil land of people. I'm interested to hear y'all's thoughts on this. Who wants to go first? Who pick one person? Because I'm sure you've probably thought of several people in this. Tell me one that you thought of.
What about Abraham? He left the land of Ur for all his family went to go where God called him to go.
Okay. Anybody else?
Joseph.
Yeah,
he wasn't a ruling or anything. They only put him a job.
Okay.
I'll put Joshua. Not only in his own service, which is chapter 11, and his family, Joshua 24:15, famous. That's not in my family, we will serve the Lord. And then others, as long as Joshua was the leader, as long as the elders with Joshua was in the land, Israel served the Lord. As soon as Joshua died, and the elders, with him died, they began to serve the other gods. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you're trying to teach an evil land, the people, you know, at least while Joshua was the leader, they followed the Lord. Mm-hmm. And he taught them that. And he himself followed the Lord. In fact, it says in that he built the altar, and in 10:12, he said he did everything faithfully as to the Lord. Moses. And so, you know, Joshua is one of those people, even amongst the wicked people, that did live right, did teach his family, and taught his family.
I thought of Noah.
I did too.
100 years to build this thing for a rain that nobody had ever seen, making fun of him. Can you imagine? Can you just imagine what it would be like? You know, what are you building, big dummy? Got voices in your head. And all this, and he just keeps on. And out of that, only 8 were spared. That's not losing your focus.
That was the only one I could think of that kept his family focused.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
Someone I thought about was Daniel.
I had Daniel as well. Yep.
They refused to eat the food. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego refused to bow down to the idol. And then Daniel refused to quit praying. Mm-hmm. And so while their family is not mentioned, they definitely kept their focus no matter
what happened. Exactly.
And they were willing to give their lives for doing what was right and not having any other idol. In fact, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that's what they were in trouble for, not bowing down to the idol that the king had made.
Exactly.
And then the king, when they said, no one make a request of him, that was kind of like he was one of their gods. And so, how dare ask another god? And Daniel said, I don't care. And, you know, he didn't go. Daniel could just as easily have closed his window and prayed. Mm-hmm. And no one would have ever known. But he did. He did exactly what he had always done. And it was interesting because they said they knew the only way they were going to find any fault with Daniel had to be in regard to his God. And wouldn't that be wonderful if somebody could say that about us?
Mm-hmm. The only way we're going to find
any fault with them. Unfortunately, I don't think people can say that about me. I've got enough of my own without that. I thought that was quite a tribute to someone to say that that's the only way you're going to find any fault with it. That's not to say Daniel didn't sin. He did, because we've all sinned.
Mm-hmm. Jesus was the only one who lived perfect on the earth. But to be thrown, taken as teenagers and thrown into this debauchery of a nation. And, you know, to be, where's God? Why am I taken from my nation? Why is this happening to us? We're supposed to be God's people, and here we are. It would have been really easy for them to lose focus.
Okay. Now give someone who did lose his focus.
David.
What happened?
With Bathsheba.
Mm-hmm.
He committed murder and fornication. He might not have killed, I can't even think his name now, himself, Bathsheba's husband, but he had him killed.
Right. Anybody else?
Moses.
Lot. Yeah. I had Moses as well.
I put Jonah.
Yeah.
I put Jonah because, you know, God told him, and of course he ran away the first time, and then, you know, he repented and he prayed, and he went there, and he did go and preach to Nineveh. And then he got mad at God because they repented, and God, you know, relented the destruction, and he gets angry, and he just wants to die, and he, you know, and he just, you know, so he loses his own focus, he even loses his attitude towards God,
mm-hmm.
and you know, instead of praising God for God's mercy on these people, he gets plain mad at God.
Peter.
But Moses.
Yeah, he said Moses.
Moses, they did not honor God before the people.
Mm-hmm. The rock from
the
water.
Rock, whether it was how he spoke or whether he
struck
because
it.
He said, shall we bring forth water? So we don't know exactly what his sin was, but it was grave enough that God would not allow him to go into the promised land. He and Aaron,
right.
And of course, Aaron had already lost focus and built the calf, because it just jumped on the fire. But,
right. And that was the situation with Moses that I thought of.
I did Solomon. He didn't
happen that fast. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot.
There's a lot. We talked earlier about manipulating situations. Yes, in our children, there are situations where we can manipulate and use to as a teaching tool for our children. We want to make sure that with our husband and our older children that we're not, and what I meant by manipulating was creating a situation or creating an opportunity. Well, if you do this, then I'll do this. And I think we need to make sure that we don't cross that line in doing that to get what we want. Or nag to get the service out of our family that we want.
When I think of manipulating, when I think of somebody that's manipulating, I don't think of that as a good thing.
Right.
But yet, as parents, we create situations, as you, I guess you could call it manipulating, but I see, to me, manipulation has a connotation of bad. Maybe I'm wrong. Is that maybe a better defining words than me? But in my mind, that's what I think of. And yet, we do, as parents, control when they're young.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's how we teach sometimes, mm-hmm. through control. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
It's when they're married and on their own, and we still try to control things that we have no control over. We have no control over them, actually. I can control me,
mm-hmm.
and our children grew up knowing, you do this, this is what I will do, no matter what. God's going to come first. I used to tell my children, I'll give you a kidney, I'll jump in front of the bus to save you.
Don't finish that.
I've heard this story before.
Just a little bit.
You know, money, grown, adult parents, you know, do that with adult children. And they, you know, it's whatever it is, I think you hit it right on. It's more like a bargaining,
mm-hmm.
and that kind of thing. And you can eat. And I see parents with young children doing the very same thing.
What exactly are you talking about? I'm not sure what you're talking about. You're saying
teenage girls will bargain this way. If you don't give in to me and let me do what I want to do, I'm going to do this, this, and this. Well, parents will turn around and do the very same thing. If you will do what I say, I will. You can have a new blah blah blah. You know, you can. You know, all this. It becomes.
Bribery.
Yeah, bribery.
Yeah.
Good bribery.
Yeah.
Basically, one example.
Exactly. Because, mm-hmm. you know, if we're doing it to our spouses, children yeah. will learn the same thing.
Mm-hmm. But manipulating, sometimes I can understand, you know, maybe there's a different word.
Now, as far as teaching our children, we can use the opportunity when situations happen for teaching. And we I don't know how to say manipulate, but
influence.
Right. Yeah.
And you can do that at the school in schools. For instance, if they're in sports and your child wants to participate in sports, but you don't like the outfit that they have to wear to play sports, you know, as a godly parent, you know, take the opportunity to go and talk and try to change that, you know, to where they can.
Right.
Or to talk to the elders about when the meetings are going to be so that your children, you know, or your husband or whatever, that you all can participate in those meetings. You know, I mean, it's not manipulating, but it's striving to make the opportunity, you know, opportunities for us to be better so that you can, you know, have the family.
We're almost done with this. Are we assuming that just because we're doing all of the, we're showing hospitality, we're coming to services, our spouses are leading in services, we're teaching, all of this, are we assuming that just because we're doing all of these things that we are godly? Exactly. We aren't if we are doing these things with the wrong attitude and the wrong heart. In Mark 4:19. Lauren, can you read that? Oh, there sure is. Lauren Hudson. Sorry.
And the cares of this world, the secrets of riches, and the desires for other things, and in the end shall be glory.
The part I wanted to focus on was the desires for other things can enter in and choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. So if we're doing things with the wrong attitude and the wrong heart to gain things, or to gain the appearance of things, then it's going to become unfruitful, and it's not going to give you the results you want or you desire. You know, we've talked about this some as well. In 1 Peter 3:1-2, says, in the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without word by the behavior, and as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. So our personal study and our personal service can speak a whole lot louder than words in situations. Our efforts need to be focused back to loving God and loving our neighbor. Our desires and our prayers should be doing all these things ourselves because we love the Lord and first, and then working with our families. And this can be done at the same time, but we need to make sure that we're doing our personal study first. We shouldn't be willing, as Miss Pat would say, we shouldn't be willing to lose our soul in the process. So we need to make sure that we're doing what we need to do and then working with our families. Yes, ma'am.
Anything you remember is God knows what goes on behind closed doors. We've got people that come to services and everybody just thinks their praises, thinks they are the most wonderful person, godly. And then, because you know what goes on at home,
hypocrite,
you think, how can that person get up there and make that kind of prayer when I know what they do at home? And so we all need to remember that. God knows what we do when we're not in the building.
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Also,
throw something at me.
We also don't realize a lot of times the influence we have on people. I was converted by my husband before we married. I moved across the street from him and observed him for over a year. And seeing his attitude and his way with his child and all, and with his parents, I envied that. I wanted that. And I didn't know what it was he had. And it wasn't 6 months after that he converted. And we were married 31 years. But you never know who's watching. Mm-hmm.
Leading by example. Okay, well, I thought we were going to be done with that and moving on to our health. So I guess we're... it was great discussion. So your health is next week. We're going to talk about our health and how that influences us. Thank you so much for coming, and thank you for your comments, and thank you for not beating up on me on this class. I was worried.